In terms of when we were talking about your wife, she had been working, but then during the Depression, was she unable to get a job?
Well,
Or
when the 30s hit, we had our first girl was born in 1925,
oh, so your kids were young.
and our second girl was about 1930.
Right, so there was no way.
And jobs weren't to be had because when you're getting along that time, there was girls who were glad enough if they got $10 a month in their board and room, they felt pretty good. Lots of them worked for their board and room.
Domestic workers.
Well, it's just to get
Yeah,
by, exist.
right, yeah.
Yeah, it's a case of existence. No, I think it's the best lesson I ever had.
Yeah.
Because I can get by, they can get it as tough as they like, and I can take it. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. It doesn't worry me a bit. But they will get it. You've got it coming. You're going to see it's all over the world. You go into Iran, you go into France, you go into Holland, you go into Germany, you've got a certain amount there, and you go right up from, you can go from the tip of South America right up. And this revolutionary movement's all on, and it's driven on by a few taking too much out of the economy and forgetting this bottom strata. And that's why I'm active in the NDP today. I see it, it doesn't worry me, but there's no way that you can make it work. Because if people talk about jobs today,
mm-hmm.
and they've talked about jobs always, every time there gets a depression, it isn't jobs, you can't take too much out of an economy and put nothing back. So the result is today, you've got the finest brains of the country working on devices electronically in every way to cut out labor, cut out the actual worker, all over, every industry you can go through it. And this machine start, you take your electronic, I'm trying to think
computers
of the word.
Or?
Computers, you take
yeah.
the, we, us bunch of dopes, and you take Cape Carnaval with their all the electronic setup. We're just average dopes, that's all. We don't know. These things are so far advanced to cause beyond our everyday life.
Sure, you could read the new books out.
Oh, books.
Future Shock. It tells about this new three-dimensional television that...
You were
active? Oh, yes, I was in the machine, I was in the union since 1916 or 17, I joined the first union. But all my life I've been active after, I've been for about 37, 40 years in the machinist now.
Were you working, did the unions do anything about unemployment during the 30s?
Well, I'll just tell you, in the 30s we couldn't do much, but the only thing that we did was do a little demonstration. We were down when the Cossacks were what we called them in those days, the mounted police. We're riding them down when the longshoremen striking that down by the sugar refinery. We had one joker in those days we called Scanlon. Yeah, he was the regular wax mustache type in those
RCMP.
Days. With all due respect, his favorite step is this length of hose, is riding on the horse. They ride right in them across
the
railroad tracks and back. Eh?
They rode on the sidewalks.
Oh, it didn't stop them anywhere as far as they go.
Just flashed the whip. There was one time they had a character there, and he used to have the Bible, and he walked up and down Hastings Street with the Bible, and he used to say, "After this, the judgment." So he's walking up Hastings Street this day during the demonstration, and he's got his Bible, and he's saying out loud, and he's holding up his Bible. After this, the judgment, wham, comes Stanley Swift right on the back of his head. They went right on the sidewalks and everything, they didn't.
Oh. Did you... This was a union... That was in the shipyards and the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace
Workers. They're all aircraft workers.
Did you work there during the war? Did you work on the aircraft during the war?
No, I worked on the ships that was on the, we were building these freighters. I worked for a year and a half building the derricks and cranes for starting out to build the bigger ship. They first started out building the corvettes and that, the small ones. They did that to use the trucks with the big derricks for to move the place, but then they put the overhead gantries, and I spent a year building the cranes, driving for building the freighters and that, and then I looked after that maintenance for till after the end of the war.
There were, one of the things that I'm doing with this project is trying to find out what happened during the war when women came into the war industries.
I had pretty near 40, between 35 and 40 women working. At that time, in this year, in the shipyards here, I was a member of the labor management. I was the shop steward for the machinist union, and three of us represented the 16 unions. It was Jimmy Bart of the Pipefitters Union, Art Lanoux of the Boilermakers, or Irons of the Shipbuilders, Marine Workers, and myself of the Machinists. We were the committee set up by the about 17 different representations who was there to take up all their grievances and anything that come up between the unions, the individuals at that time, you know, this, every day there's always something.
Right. So these...
Got 8,000 men working in there, 8,000 people yet.
Yeah.
It's,
the shipyards really grew during the war, right? From mm-hmm. The shipyards grew from...
Oh, yeah, grew. There wasn't very much before. We had 8,000 to 9,000 men. And there is the tribe labor managements and all.
Here. Who's that woman?
That was the secretary to
of
this.
The union?
And, yeah. No, no, of the management. This is all men. This is the fellow telling you, the Scotchman was the coordinator that they brought in. But these are all, or a lot of these still known today. These are all superintendents and foremen on that. And I don't know, I'm in there, so that's me back here in those days. Yeah.
Right. So what was it like when these 40 women were working there? Can you talk a bit about what it was like for them to come into the
before the union?
40 women, yeah, when they came in. Were they in the union?
Oh, what we did, well, some started to build the big ships, that is the freighters. Then material, a lot of things were scarce. We take bolts and nuts, they're used, and they're put on, they're hammered off, all the plates are bolted.
Right.
And these had to be re-threaded in many cases, and the nuts.
Right.
Tapped out again, that is the thread. So they started up the shop. We cut what we call the bolt shop. We set up by itself in the premises, and that was all women were working that.
Hmm.
Young women and that. And they did that because women are far, far better suited to do a repetition job than what men are. In a job like that where it's, you know, there isn't much variation all day. So we had them there for quite a while.
Were they in the union? Were they in the union?
Oh, yes. That's why I was dealing with them, because I was for the machinist, I was the shop steward on the job and labor management. So they come under my category. I used to have to go up every now and then. Of course, you had sometimes your little caddy spells and that. And it's quite a job when you get about 30 to 40 women together, you know, along lines. And
what kind of grievances did they have? What kind of grievances did they have?
Oh, they didn't have many grievances. There were some they had some petty ones amongst themselves. Some supplies or changes in the facilities or that. That was mostly it. But outside of that, had very little grievance except the little personal grievances that they would get amongst themselves, get a, you know, a little mm-hmm. warfare of their own.
Were they pro-union?
Beg your pardon?
Were they in favor of the union? These
oh, yes.
women, yeah.
They all had to belong to the union because we had a closed shop. And they had their shop steward to look after things, and they had their representatives. They'd go to the union meeting just the same as anybody else. They had their representatives would go. But I did most of their I did most of their, whatever they had, or grievance, because that's what we did, was look after the grievances for several unions on the Labor Management Committee.
How did the guys feel about women coming into that kind of industrial job?
It didn't affect, oh, we not, that's the only thing that was under my jurisdiction. But we had, see, coming in, the mostly of the ones that came in was in welding, which they could do. And we had cases of a man and a wife might be both working in the shipyards. But we had, oh, there's a lot of incidents that had happened, you know, through the years there. No, we didn't resent the women. I can't say that we did. We had women working in different setups in town through the city besides that. No, I never heard resentment. And then in the aircraft, see, the aircraft was with us, and as we the airspace workers and that, and we had a lot of women working there on jobs. Mm-hmm. So, and then we had other, some factories with them, and so it really didn't matter. The only thing with the women, and I had an occasion, oh, I had the odd occasion, I used to run the sports and welfare, and had the women taking part. And then when before the war come to an end, there was a great, some of us that were interested, we were trying to figure what we would do with, what we're going to do with this employment and jobs. And that time, they used to say that people didn't want to work. They sure as hell didn't want to quit working, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. And I had cases of that, so trying to figure out on the labor management meeting, and the trades council, but particularly there, I made the statement that where there was a man and a wife working in the yard, that one job should be one job if the layoffs come, just one working. Well, Jesus, did I get a going over for that on the trades council meeting, and old Schauer was. He was the president at the time. The boiler paper, the boiler makers give me a round in their paper about I was discriminating between women. The NDP papers or the CCF paper, they give me a round about it. And then when I come to the meeting of the Trades Council, Schauer of the Teamsters, he was the president, somebody brought it up to me. So he says, Foster's either an awful brave man or an awful damn fool. I'll already remember that, but the big part was, within the month, I had my comeback. In Winnipeg, they had a lot of trouble. They had big union of packing workers and that working. And they come out. There was two of them working in the job. There must be just one if there's any layoffs come. And that was just within a month after I'd come out and said that here and got a roasting. Mm. So it was a policy. I couldn't see because I held a field day. I had charge of sports. I was chairman of that, and we had a painter come on, was working there. He come back from overseas, and he had a wife, and he had a couple of little kids, and he was working there, and then he had to stay home and look after the things. They were building a place. They didn't have much, and he came back to work after about 6 weeks. Come back into work and he dropped dead on the deck. So when it comes to welfare and sports, then I had to do something. So organized a field day. We had several of them after, but at McMahon Park in North Vancouver. And we had prizes, everything going. We raised about $1,200. And it was enough then to, he was building this place, it wasn't finished inside and that. We finished off a bit with the plastering and that. We were able to give her money to get by at the time being with the kids.
Yeah.
And that. And I also got going over about that, and that was from the left side of the party in those days. They asked me what the hell I wanted to do that for. I said, the sooner you break them down, the sooner we can leave them. And that was from the Trotskyites or Stalinites we had in the yard that time. Well, I said, who the hell wants to lead a bunch of broken down widows with a bunch of kids? I said, where are you going to lead them to? And we had quite a time there. In that day, we had a strong set up in the Union. See, we had about 35 or 37 real leftists, and they it was a struggle. Sometimes our meetings last till 1 o'clock, and the game was, some was in the fight. The game was just to wait till you got everybody down and you had a majority, and then passed a resolution to send a recommendation to Ottawa to this or that, which was class legislation, not union. I said, any time you're speaking front and serve the benefit of the workers and the union, I'll speak to it, and that's it. I said, I have no party. Well, we can't do anything here. And I said, I can't help it. I said, that's the way it is, and that used to be. I mean, these are all things that, as a background that you got, you know.
Yeah, that was when there was an attempt to form the Shipyard General Workers Union.
The which?
The Shipyard General Workers Union.
Well, we had the shipyard workers when we come in originally in the first World War. It was the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Blacksmiths, Boilermakers, and Iron Shipbuilders. That was an international. Our local, when it comes to shipboard, which was a good deal, and we had quite a few leftist readers in them. Martin Lanoux was to the left. We were all more or less social minded. A lot of us, some a little more than others, and I don't know. It's I'd belong when I'd speak to it, I'd fight with it or anything else, but I couldn't go along with this side of break them down and we'll lead them. You know, the communist policy.
What do you got on your fence by the polyester?
What did she say? Then, of course, when it comes through in the union, I belonged to the executive. I was active in the shipyards, and you're into several different things: the trades council, the metal trades council, and the district lodge of machinists. All these things. I had 11 days a month.
Every month,
I had 11 set ones with meetings there for years, and you got used to it. I've got down to the point today. I can see. I'm sure. You're leading to a complete upset. You can't take this everything out of the economy, and your multinational corporations and that today have got so powerful that the individual, us kidding ourselves that we're going to create jobs, and we're spending more money and time trying to find ways to not create them, but to have a machine do them, you know, electronic. I can't see it. So you're going to follow the example of all these countries. There's no a country like Iran. You maybe your religious problem was there, but you've got the same proposition facing us. They were getting big improvements compared with a lot of their countries, but still, I saw those thousands of people, and then the biggest thing I got out of that, it showed you how backward we still are in a country like that. I saw the women parading on the TV, and all these guys, they looked to be around 30 or that, they were all shaking up and fighting to get up and hit the women, you know, in that parade. I don't know whether you saw it on that Iran one. Mm-hmm. And they were fine and dandy. You see, they wanted to go back to the veils and the skirt, back to, well, I put it as they weren't equal, no equal rights. They wanted to back there the old slaves, you know.
Did after the war, did women who were working in the shipyards wanna keep their jobs? Did they talk about wanting to keep their jobs at all?
Well, the jobs could only last that long, the same as the men. They were in the same position.
Everyone was
there. I never saw men when the war. It used to be that people didn't want to work in that, but they sure as hell fought to keep to be kept on and wait till the very end.
Were the women laid off first?
No, the women were laid off as the job. Well, what the women were doing, there was no use of them. There's no use in them repairing bolts and nuts and that if there was no place to
put them.
Use them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. And in the union during the war, was there a discussion of equal work and equal pay, like equal pay for equal work?
Oh yes, I don't. I don't, on a job that was handled, of course, we always had, that was always that was always a part of life. We didn't have too many occasions in our setup, that is, locally, we didn't have where women were fitted in, were doing the same work for less money. No, our problem has always been to fight for equal money, and in the shipyards, they got the, there was no difference in the wage, whether it was a man doing it or a woman doing it.
And that was seen as a way of ensuring that everyone's wages would not be undercut?
Well, you're under a union agreement.
Right.
And you can't work if you're... Your contract is tied up with the employer, and there's no way that you could possibly undercut it, except unless it was an open shop and there was no union. But you're right there, agreement. They must hire members of the organization, or within, if it was a RAND formula, that they must become a member within 30 days of that, of the union. They could be also, if they went on a checkoff system, if they had a religious objection or something belonged to the union, which some of them used, they could, all they had to do was pay their, they could pay their dues and still not take an active part.
Right. What about piece work? Did people fight to abolish piece work during the war?
Well, piece work is a part. I worked on piece work, and they figured out there's so much was a day's work. I can only speak to that on reproduction or production work, like in the First World War, like I was riveting and that, bucking up and riveting. And we worked so much to rivet. And then there was sections, there's lots of sections where you couldn't possibly make wages, your food, that is tough corners and that, where there's certain jobs that had to be done and you're limited. See, you could drive 700 or 800 rivets a day in the shell of the boat, but and the decks, you could tell you, we did as many as 1,100 a day on the decks. But then you got other places on the, like the stern post and that, you might turn 7 or 8 there, big rivets. But so many places, corn, then you'd be picking up. Some gangs did nothing but pick up ones here and there that were left, or some that had to be left. So piecework didn't hurt the worker. They had different allowances. You get $4.60 a day booking up when I was there. Riveter was $6.24, that is on the better work. Right. A day, not an hour, a day.
Right.
And if he could drive 700 or 800 rivets, and some of them were shell rivets, were 7 or 8 cents a piece. You got an allowance if you were a crew that was capable of doing a certain amount. You got a $16 allowance, or you're on a $20 allowance, which is the better, that is the heater, bucker up and the riveter. But the regular wage for the riveter was $6.24 in those days, and the bucker up was $4.50, $4.60, and the heater $3 something.
What about some of the policy during the war, like the no-strike pledge? Were there debates in the union about adopting those policies?
On the strikes?
Yeah. And,
well, all conditions had to come up. all these conditions had to come up in the union. And if they went on strike, generally, in many cases, it was, the big ones were general strikes, that is, general working class strikes, like 1918, if you're going back there. And we had one in this last war. We had a spell where we had a general strike.
When was that?
That was the I'll give you one personal one. I was quite active in it, and the machinist went out, and that's the engineers and that. We all belong to the same union. And we pulled out and we sat down. They were working a 7-day work plan. That is, they were rotating it along.
Right.
So what they got the big idea that you take Monday off, I take Tuesday, Joe takes Thursday, and you kept a continuous work plan going, but you eliminated overtime, Saturday or Sunday work, you know, premium time. Instead of time and a half or double.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It was all one deal.
Right.
So we objected to it, so we sat down in the shop. We went in, we punched the clock every day. We went in the shop, we sat down, we had a meeting, we had mock funerals and every other thing, burying the minister of war minister and that. We were 2 or 3 weeks, in the meantime I was on the negotiating committee we set up Judge Richards from Winnipeg. This went on, and we went in, we sat down, we didn't do anything, punched the clock. When it come quitting time, we punched the clock and went out. And in the meantime, we happened to have a business agent on this particular stoppage. We had a business agent who was used to, maybe thought that we were an odd bunch of workers or that. He come in, he says, "You bastards," he says, "you'll go back to work and look at it." And so I got up and I said, "You or nobody else calls us a bunch of so-and-sos or anything else." And we were pretty well organized, as is our shop, amongst the workers and that. And this went on for about 3 weeks, and they sent after it on a while. They got Judge Richards from Winnipeg come out and set up a Richards Commission to investigate the stoppage and that. And we had meetings up above the post office. I was on several with them, and they made offers to come back they'd send down if we'd accept them, or if they'd accept them, and of course, as long as we were in their way, they didn't accept them. And this went on several occasions, and if they come out the last one, if we regularly had me up at the office, up in the post office with the government office, you know, and Richards and the member of the commission were there. They held a meeting and then wanted to get a vote over in the yard when I wasn't there for one. And they got a vote too after all these different meetings and that. Mm-hmm. And they said that if they accepted the agreement that is the 7-day work plan, that they would that Ottawa would institute a week's holiday with pay. And this is the background of it, if you go into the facts of it, if we'd go back to work, you know, we wouldn't accept it. And I was up in the office in the meeting, and when they went down the yard and got a vote through, and they just skinned it through to accept it. So old Judge Richards said to me, he says, "You never did accept it, did you?" I said, "No." I says, "I never accepted." And I said, "If I'd have been in the yard, nobody else would have accepted either at the time." And anyways, that was the beginning, as far as we were concerned, that is the nucleus of the Holiday Act, you know, your mm-hmm. Holiday Pay Act. With that, lots don't know that, but we ran the compressor and that in the place. Our man is under our jurisdiction, and little before that, during the war, we were having a lot of trouble with machinery breaking down. Somebody would shove a bolt in the gears, you know, on a plate machine. And I was on the maintenance, and Chris would spend half the night on my cranes. They'd maybe stick a bolt in between the pinion and the other gear and snap a couple of teeth out. And I'd spend half the night fixing up teeth. This went along pretty good. We had a lot of it in the plate machine down below where the gears were against meeting, you know, big gear, and that's your bolt in, rounded to come, out go a teeth, out go a tooth, and you'd spend hours putting them in. And then that was when Hitler, and there's a doubtful whether he's going to go in with Russia or not. I was undecided what was going to happen when he went into Poland.
Excuse me, Buster. Have you got any more snapshots or pictures?
There's some
I've got a thousand of them.